JC2S, Part 2.
Number 17B.
So she's love, you know, comes always and sums up what has gone before. And she says, well, that this whole life spirit, which is going to lift a dead theology into a living theology, that just can't be held back. Regardless to the neglect of a mistaken sense of the Bible, or adhering to opposing systems, or the belief that God can be perceived through the senses, or the belief that God is in a human form, or even our practice of words instead of living examples, even if our words don't coincide with our works. And even if we try to crown kings in theology, as kings are crowned from a royal dynasty, she says, besides of all this neglect that has gone before, that life which is truth, in spite of that, is going to manifest itself. And that neglect will not hinder Christian Science from going forward. A change is demanded. See, that's the marginal heading. And whenever a change is demanded, you can't keep back the changing Christ. If the changing Christ demands it, then it must happen. See, that's that tone of this marginal heading. So it sets this whole tone, saying, even if Christian Science is finally neglected in the last instance by pulpit, press, and institutions of learning, whether it's rejected by the world sciences, the world's theology, and the world medicine, even that based on that old philosophy of materialism, even if that in the last straw neglected, it's going to go forward. Because the Christ is the Christ is going to demand it. It must happen. And so she shows here that sense then that there is under love, there's going to be a universal acceptance. That's always that love tone is of universal. So whenever we have that life is truth as love tone comes in and says there's going to be universal adoption of the scientific religion of love. Of this science which is wedded to Christianity, this Christian Science, and of its divine healing. And so she says that the universal adoption of the scientific religion of love and of divine healing, she says, that's going to be adopted. She says, and she's as if she's saying the pulpits will do justice to Christian Science because a change is demanded. Even though they seem to reject it, the Christ is the Christ is at work and it must happen. See, that's that tone, as I said, is that marginal heading. So the pulpits will do justice to Christian Science. The press will give Christian Science fair representation. The institutes of learning will give to Christian Science its place now occupied by old sciences, old theology, and old medicine. That is that ultimate goal, that ultimate view in purpose, in view within evolution, that this is going to be wrought out in our life experience. You hear that tone coming on of the 7,000-year period here, that universal adoption in the third degree, mortal mind disappears, and man is God's image appear. It's going to happen. And when it does happen, she said, the results will be the amelioration of sin, sickness, and death. What does ameliorate mean? To make better, to turn into health. So she says, when this universal adoption of the scientific religion of love comes, in spite of the present rejection, it will turn into health, sin, sickness, and death. In less time, see, that's that 11th hour sense. So she's saying, don't be concerned if Christian Science, even near the end of the 6,000-year period, is still being rejected by old sciences, theology, and medicine. If the pulpit and press still isn't writing about it, no concern. Because when it comes, it will change in less times. As I said, it's that sudden influx, that mutation. That's that mutation of life, the spontaneity of life, the sudden change of all those old systems. And so it will happen in less time than it took for all those old systems to try to change the world. So she's saying, though it looks like these old systems of science, theology, and medicine have been grinding away through history, trying to change the world, that this subject, when it comes on the laws of life, those laws of isness, which are coming right out of divine origin, that life impulse, which is coming out of the isness of life, which is coming spontaneously, instantaneously, and immediately, it will make that non-linear breakthrough. It will make that vertical impact on the horizontal. And that sudden insight will change everything. We see today how, in the language of science, they see now how things aren't so predictable anymore, aren't they? Because they are allowing more and more for a non-linear thinking, non-linear events to happen. They see that things are happening non-linearly, meaning spontaneously, unpredictably. And that just is that influx of life, that life operating dimensionally out of the science itself, law of isness. Life on divine science as a self-organizing, self-regulating life, which is always operating out of itself, through itself, as itself, for the glory of itself on divine science, is operating out of itself and coming to us on the level of absolute Christian science as the laws of spontaneity, as the laws of mutation. And that just breaks into the world and suddenly has these changes. This is why change is happening so rapidly, because the world is getting more and more open to the Christ's laws of spontaneity. They see that those are also laws in being, besides those time-honored laws of causality. So the world is opening up more and more to these and recognizing these laws of sudden change. And certainly we see how things are happening rapidly. And so it sees that we already see how change is happening through these laws of life. And so we can begin to appreciate that when this new theology, this scientific religion of love, has its universal adoption through the crisis of the Christ, it happens quickly in less time, and the change happens right now. It's a change, but the world has been prepared for it. That's why in evolution we see that it seems to be a long horizontal thrust, that it seems like it's precept upon precept, idea upon idea, and then suddenly the graph begins to go from the horizontal to the vertical. That's why they see today that when they graph out the developments in sciences, that the graph goes slowly but surely from the, let's say, the 15th century to the 16th century to the 17th century to the 18th century to the 19th century to the 20th century. It starts taking an upward grow, and it starts going up, 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 up to now. The graph practically goes vertically, because of that sense of we have left the addition sense and have gotten more into the exponential sense. We have left that sense of the machine world, of precept upon precept, of part working upon part, part to part to part to part, to the holistic dimensional teleological world of an Einsteinian world, which is a multidimensional world, which doesn't operate so much in addition, but much more in multiplication, much more in an exponential rate, much more in a information universe world, leaving the old world of the Industrial Revolution in the sciences and going to information being substance. It begins to multiply quickly. So they say, and I just want to take a few moments here, you know that Wernher von Braun did that research, and he said, for example, I think he said it something like this, from the 1800s to the 1900s, it took 100 years to double knowledge. But from the 1900 to 1950, it took 50 years to double knowledge. And then from 1950 to, let's say, 1960, it took about 10 years to double knowledge. And then I think that's where he left it off. What do they say today? Knowledge may be doubling every 2 years or so, maybe faster. So we've left that machine world, that industrial age, and we've entered the age of the information age, which is an information begins to multiply at an exponential growth rate, and it's allowed within the Einsteinian physics, within this holistic nonlinear reasoning, and that's why the horizontal is becoming the vertical. And as it does that, then it goes very quickly. You see? Because we've entered a new age of life. We entered the age of the multiplication. And Mrs. Zetti says, sometime we have to get out of addition and into multiplication. Well, the Christ is taking the world out of addition into multiplication. And when that happens, it happens quickly. And so this universal adoption of the scientific, of religion, of love, have no worry that it's neglected now. It will happen quickly when the time is right. So we come now to that tone of life as love. And, well, excuse me, yes, life is love in the main tone. And we see always with a love tone, it summarizes that which has gone before. And so we know now that that one life, that drive of life, that acceleration of life, that breakthrough of life is going to lift theology from a dead theology into a living practical theology. And so we see that that has happened then, and we just always exercise, as Max has shown us in point three in the epitome book, on going over the logical flow of the epitomes. Just once we concept build, then we know that tonality building is going over and over and over again in consciousness, the flows of these laws till they become the tone of our consciousness. And once they become the tone of our consciousness, they become then our being, because consciousness determines our experience. So this is just a drill. That's why I go over and over, certainly because not that we don't know what has already been said, but because we're drilling. We're tonality building. So I'm just doing that point three that we found as part of our exercise. So that's when we drill and go over, then we see that that one life lifts theology from a dead to a living practical Christianity. I often say Christianity or Christianity. A lot of the students like Christianity because that is taking liberties with the term Christianity, but it's the outcome of the Christ, isn't it? And so Max has given us that liberty to be able to say Christianity instead of Christianity, meaning that it's the Christ at work in the whole realm of being, as opposed to the religion of Christianity. So if sometimes I say Christianity or Christianity, it's I'm taking liberties with that term. So we see then that that one life lifts a theology from a dead to a living theology. How? Then we saw that she gave us so far six subtones, beginning to develop that theme from its premise to its conclusion. So she says, yes, that one life does lift a theology through that one life spirit, the Christ spirit, which has to come to receptive thought. That has to be the premise, the basis from which that life can begin its lifting. It certainly cannot begin lifting from something that is not like itself, she says, such as an unreceptive thought. That the lifting begins where there is openness. And so that was the life is mine tone. And then we saw that that one life has within itself that dynamic power that comes to us and lifts. And if it doesn't find likeness and finds the unreceptive thought, then the Christ in the second translation grinds to powder everything within us that isn't receptive to the new theology. So therefore, it goes on and shows life is spirit, showing that that one life power therefore evolves. It takes that, it wants to take a theology forward. So in order to take it forward, it has to have that spirit tone coupled with the Christ to overcome all material resistance. So you can see that this life power is not only, it has the truth. See, whenever one is within truth, which this textbook is, it's truth's volume at the 6,000 year period. Truth then, as we know, always protects the truth, establishes the truth, the first translation, and destroys error. So we can always look at these two translations going on at any time. And you hear it in the epitomes, where Max says that that one life or Christ spirit is revealed only to the receptive thought, and then the through the retranslation, that is destroying the unreceptive thought. Or that one life spirit is that which is taking theology forward. It's life in and of spirit, life in and of spiritual evolution of which Jesus was. And what's that doing is the second translation, breaking down all material resistance. And then we see that life is soul, that that one life power, therefore, that same Christ spirit, it is establishing that new theology. How? Because it's healing sin as well as sickness. And it's making Christianity identical with science. And at the same time, you see, it's breaking down all limitations, that only theology can heal sin and not sickness. Or it's breaking down the resistance within theology that it cannot be wedded to science. See, it's both sides of the same coin is happening. Then that one life lifts theology how? Well, it does it as principle, as that impersonal principle which heals. And therefore, that's overcoming and breaking down all the resistance to that forward development by believing that human personalities heal. And that one life power lifts theology from a dead to a living theology. How? By the Christ coming to us and bringing to us that Christ spirit so we possess the Christ spirit. And through the retranslation, making us follow the Christ example. Then we see that that one life lifts theology as truth to become that life power which is established as divine consciousness, as a consciousness of the truth. And now that is overcoming all that which would try to subdue that life power which is at work in divine consciousness. Therefore, it's subduing all that erroneous consciousness, which tries to keep the idea from going forward, that erroneous consciousness which is really mob rule by human beliefs. All those universal, collective, and individual beliefs that tried to keep the forward moving of the new theology from going forward. What are those universal, collective, and individual beliefs that try to keep us from going forward in the new theology? Well, then she gives us more information, as we said. Life is truth. That one life is truth cannot be subdued by a mistaken sense of the Bible or of science, theology, and medicine, or of our own life, that regardless of mistakes, in spite of mistakes, that Christ as a Christ is bringing us forward. Therefore, the life is truth. The Spirit said that that one life Spirit is going to go on in spite of adhering to opposing systems. Even if we go to these opposing systems, that Christ will come and grind to powder that false belief, that erroneous standpoint within us, and it will heal and bring forward even those who, she said, were adhering at the moment, temporarily, she said, to these opposing systems. And she said that that one life cannot be subdued by even the belief that God can be perceived through the senses. Because that Christ Spirit is coming, and it's showing, therefore, that God is not corporeal. God is incorporeal. So there at life, as truth, as soul, we saw, well, of course, God cannot be perceived through the senses, through the channel of the five physical senses, because God is not corporeal. God is laws. How can we see laws? So she says on the right point of truth, well, that God as truth can be perceived, and it's perceived through spiritual sense. Then she says, as life is truth, is principle, that that one life cannot be subdued by the error of anthropomorphism, the belief that God is really a god of mythology, a god in a human form, and shows really that God is a life form. God is that living principle love, that living law in operation. And then she shows that that one life cannot be subdued by scholasticism or ecclesiasticism, that it isn't such that even though they believe that that one life spirit can only go forward by PhD, passing it on to PhD, passing it on to PhD, or as kings are crowned from a royal dynasty within an organization, that still will not hold it back, because that Christ Spirit will break into and use its own channels and find that channel which is culturing the truth consciousness within itself. Then we saw that that life is truth, that that healing Christ Spirit cannot be subdued by, even if it looks like it is not accepted even by the pulpit, press, or institutes of learning. She says it doesn't matter, that it will come. It will, that the Christ is demanding a change, and there will be universal adoption of the scientific religion of love. And so we saw that we needn't be concerned, because she says when the time is right and it's ripe, that the Christ has made it ripe for the universal adoption of the scientific religion of love, that once that happens, that it will ameliorate or turn into health sin, sickness, and death spontaneously, much faster than it has taken the old methods of science, theology, and medicine. So we saw then that that was true, that because we could see now that the world is beginning to think much more in non-linear thinking, that much more the world now is going from that slow addition sense of things, adding upon adding upon adding upon adding, that the world now begins to leave the horizontal. And if you watch a graph, we saw that information which took 100 years to double, and then 50 years to double, and then 10 years to double. We left the subject then at noon by seeing that suddenly, maybe they say today it takes 2 years to double. The figures may have changed, but the horizontal has become the vertical. So we see now that we are beginning to catch the tone that, yes, that life will, when the time is right, and Christ has set it right, will come, and it will change the world in less time than it has taken these old systems. So we do that. I just did that as an exercise to show that that was that point three then, to logically flow with the epitomes. Just don't leave them at concept building. But when we go home, go through the subject of theology, just keep building it up through the epitomes to keep the subject warm, to keep it alive, to keep it tonality within consciousness. So now as we come to life is love, we say, oh yes, well, as I said, this always seems to be tying together the subject. And we look at the epitome and she says, well, that through welcoming the whole Christ spirit, a superficial sense of Christianity is cast out. So she's picking up that life is truth is love tone and saying the world will welcome. It must happen. The world will welcome the whole Christ spirit. And when it does, that's that tone of love, of welcoming, isn't it? And it will welcome the new theology. And when it does, it will. And it will welcome, you hear the first translation, through welcoming the whole Christ spirit. And how does that happen? Always through the Emmanuel, God with us. That life is love tone is brought to us. It makes us welcome. And when it does, it retranslates out everything that isn't like the welcoming of the whole Christ spirit. And so what it retranslates out here is a superficial sense of Christianity. So we say that's fine. We can certainly see that because we have been catching the tone of what a superficial sense of Christianity might be so far. So let's now take a look at page 142 and just read together what she says. Beginning there on 142:4 to 24. And she talks about two claims omitted, and then selfishness and loss. And the temple cleansed under three different marginal headings, all right? Anciently, the followers of Christ or truth measured Christianity by its power over sickness, sin, and death. But modern religions generally omit all but one of these powers, the power over sin. We must seek the undivided garment, the whole Christ, as our first proof of Christianity, for Christ's truth alone can furnish us with absolute evidence. If the soft palm upturned to a lordly salary and architectural skill, making dome and spire tremulous with beauty, turn the poor and the stranger from the gate, they at the same time shut the door on progress. In vain do the manger and the cross tell their story of pride and fustian. Sensuality palsies the right hand and causes the left to let go its grasp on the divine. As in Jesus' time, so today, tyranny and pride need to be whipped out of the temple, and humility and divine science to be welcomed in. The strong cords of scientific demonstration, as twisted and wielded by Jesus, are still needed to purge the temples of their vain traffic in worldly worship and to make them meet dwelling places for the Most High. So we can feel a sense of love there, of how the Christ is really coming and making the temple the dwelling place for the Most High.